just provided that for you as insight.
Oh, insight. So I get to like zoom in and look at stuff. Look at that.
Get your own personal.
Spectacular.
Yeah, it's like having a little handheld printout of our trip.
Except it is not handheld.
Man, printed. I can hear you drinking in like very high fidelity in my headphones. It's a little bit. A little bit disgusting, I gotta be honest. It's gonna make me really self-conscious. I'm gonna like lean back now when I take a drink.
Whatever.
Hold on, I'll be back in a couple seconds. I'm gonna take a drink.
Well, part of the reason is like I'm very pinned in here. There's not a whole lot of room. Oh, honey, your plant.
Yeah.
Aww.
The slow death of the computer plants.
I think it needs to go back by the sunlight for a little bit.
No, what it needs is water. So for people listening, this is a succulent plant, and it requires very little maintenance, but it does require some maintenance. So I've been taking it to the extreme, I think.
It gets no sunlight and no water. And
it's it's a succulent, right?
I don't know. It's aloe vera. It's like a cactus.
Oh.
So it needs sunlight, and it doesn't need much water, but I don't think it gets either.
Well, it definitely is not getting water, and the sunlight it gets has to travel all the way. It has to travel through the window and then all the way across the room.
Yeah. So no. All right.
So it's slowly dying.
Slowly dying.
But it was like $5, so not that big of a deal, to be honest. I think the pot cost more than the plant did.
It did. Legitimately did. All right. So
what are we looking at here?
We're looking at Parker, go away.
You're looking at your phone.
I'm looking at both because I'm looking at your map, mytracks.co.
Nice. Good plug.
To see our route. And then I'm also looking at my phone because I took more pictures than you have on your mytracks.
Got it. Well, see, I was hoping with the pictures is it would cue your thoughts.
Right.
Because I have a picture on almost every spot that we like stopped to take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take pictures where we ate, but like, so what we're looking at, we made this thing, mytracks.co, which is a map, and it's just a cool way to view trips you've taken. So it's a pretty map. It shows your tracks, all the places you've traveled. And that track is generated by you recording it while you drive. So we have our iPhone mounted in our dash, and that's just constantly recording while we're driving.
Or not driving.
Oh, right, or it's recording in my pocket as 10. What usually happened is we would start the day, I would sometimes hit record, I would sometimes remember about 20 minutes into the drive, which is not a big deal, because like 20 minutes, you don't go that far. And then, so I would hit record, and then I just don't hit stop for the entire day, which is cool. But then at the end of the day, you have to remember to hit stop, which most of the time we'd be stopped for 2, 3, 4 hours before I even remembered to hit stop. And at one of the days, I completely forgot all night. So it ran all night while we slept. And then I woke up in the morning and hit stop. So that was fun. I drew a track in a friend's house, basically. Because all I was doing is walking around their house probably for the rest of the evening. So I got a real good layout.
You got the kitchen.
Got a good floor plan.
Living room, backyard, guest room, bathroom.
Yeah.
Back to the kitchen.
But the file was like the same size as all the other files. So there's not a lot of penalties for doing that, really.
No.
And it doesn't actually really make the noise that, or the map that noisy either, because you got to really zoom in to see that kind of stuff. But if you do... Look, I'm zooming in now. I'm showing Louisa the track. It's this ginormous collection of steps inside this person's house.
At Luke's house, yeah.
Anyways, it's pretty, yeah, Luke.
You took a little adventure out in the backyard, it looks like.
Yeah. So for Christmas, we took a couple weeks off. Well, Louisa has that time off anyway. And I'm switching jobs, so I also had that time off. I think the company I was working for had that time off anyway, but I wasn't. Actually, I was working there, but yeah. So we all had that. Everybody had the time off. So we took 2 weeks to drive from Denver up to Seattle, and then we spent a few days in Seattle, and then we drove down south to LA, and spent a few days in LA. And then we drove back home to Denver through a different route. So that's what we're looking at now, because that was like a week ago, right?
Yeah. I went back to work on Monday.
Okay, so the map is to help us figure out what happened.
What did we do? Baxter, what did we do?
So do you have any highlights or lowlights from the trip to Seattle, which was 4 days?
Oh, there was tons of highlights. What are you talking about? There was the cool rock formation where we camped the first night.
In Utah.
And then the drive up through Idaho, right? We saw all that amazing snow.
Yeah, deep snow.
Deep, like
Baxter deep.
Waist. Yeah, Baxter, like legs disappearing.
Yeah, snow up to Baxter's
belly. Baxter belly snow. Ooh, but not to skip too far ahead. I got to see Steamboat Springs for the first time, and that was a cute little town.
Yeah.
Which you've been there already. Mm-hmm. I think we podcasted about that. But we didn't get to go to the Western store. Baxter, you're being insanely obnoxious. Go lay down. I think he's hungry. Anyway, Steamboat Springs was a super cute town. We want to go to the Western store, so we have to go back.
Yeah.
And then we camped, and that was really cold.
That was the coldest night, I think.
Yeah. Do you remember when you turned off the heater and instantly our breath was just like...
Freezing in the air. Falling into ice on the bottom of the truck. Yeah, it was... I think it was 14 degrees that night.
Ugh. It was just cold.
Yeah, but the heater came in clutch.
Yeah, the heater was great while we had it on.
Yeah, so we did kind of one trip to test it, but then we really used it on this one almost every night.
Every night. But there wasn't a night we didn't use it.
Yeah.
The night in Palm Springs, we didn't use it because it was like 60 degrees. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our days were definitely structured around the coldness. Like,
yeah,
we found camp early, like 3:30, because the sun goes down at 4:30.
Right.
And then we would spend an hour driving around finding a place to stay, because our general strategy is just find public land and then drive around and find a place that is clean and flat and pretty and whatever,
yeah,
and isolated. And then walk the dog, get the truck ready, which takes some pictures, and then immediately just spend the rest of the night in the truck because it's so freaking cold and it's dark out. go into the truck, crank up the heater,
yeah,
and just let it run for 4 hours while I edit photos on my iPad and you play video games on your phone.
And we watch like a movie or something.
Watch Netflix. Sounds very non-camping, but I feel like that's an important part of camping, is just like hanging out and doing the normal stuff, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I definitely enjoy sitting around. I know you're not a campfire sitter, but I love to sit around a campfire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that is the struggle with camping in the winter, is it's too damn cold to A, build a fire, and B, to sit around it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we only had one campfire. We camped, I don't even know, 10 times, I don't know. But we only had one fire, and it was in California.
When it was warm enough to sit around the fire.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
I kept my body outside of my sleeping bag most of the night.
Yeah, I had the sleeping bag over me as a blanket, and I got way too hot.
Yeah, and that was a cool night too, because we met up with a bunch of people that we had never met before.
Right, that was our only night also camping with people we had chosen to camp with.
Yeah.
There was another night we camped with other people, but that's another story.
Yeah, that was awkward. So this is like our last night camping too. We go, I don't remember where, let me look at the map real quick.
It was the pink coral sand dunes in Utah.
Yeah, okay. So our last night camping, right before our final drive home, which was long, it was 619 miles on our last day, which actually went by fast because we did a lot of highway. But this last night, we found these dunes, which are like a nice place to camp. But when we got to the dunes, they were
sloppy.
Yeah, they were muddy.
Yeah, because there was a ton of snow. So the sand wasn't dry sand. It was wet, sloppy sand.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, it just didn't look like, it just looked like it was going to be a disaster. Like tracking sand into the truck and like Baxter being covered in sand and then crawling in bed with us. So
that was a big thing, just trying to stay clean.
Yeah. Trying to keep like the sleeping area. Because
we had like the same day we just went to the gas station and used a squeegee to clean the back seat.
Yeah. No, it wasn't the same day.
Was
that
the day
was
before?
Like, no, that was in Idaho.
Oh, okay.
That we had to squeegee the back seat.
Baxter got so freaking muddy that he just like destroyed the back seat. And he wasn't even trying. He was just like standing there looking uncomfortable in all the mud.
Right.
And so at the gas station, we just grabbed like the windshield squeegee thing and just like we're squeegeeing the back seat.
And it worked really well. Yeah. I mean, it was just like just a pure moment of desperation on my part where I was just like, I'm just going to squeegee the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of saw your face go like, what are you doing for a second? And then you came in with the paper towels and it like totally worked.
Yeah.
So now we know we can squeegee the back seat.
New strategy, the magic of the pleather. It cleans really well.
So anyways, the mud was, I think, in Idaho.
But anyways, back to the dunes.
Back to the dunes. So we see these dunes and we're like, okay, we're not camping there because this is just going to be a mess. And we had seen a couple of turnoff places prior to the dunes that we had said out loud, let's mentally keep an eye on this or remember where this is just in case. So we turn around.
So we knew it was like a mile back because we were making note of this on the way.
Right.
Just in case we had to turn around. And we did.
And we did.
So that was good.
That was good. So we turn around and we pull up into this road and do a little exploration. And it looks like the road doesn't go very far. It goes right up to like somebody's land where there's a fence. And then there's some trees and then there's a big clearing. Right.
Yeah, it's like a big, it was covered, everything was covered in snow. It just
at
snowed.
At least like.
It's probably like, what, like four or 5 inches?
Four inches of snow. It wasn't super deep, but it was deep enough.
Yeah, it was like a nice covering. Like you couldn't see the ground anywhere. It was pretty fresh. But yeah, it was a clearing with like a circle of trees around it. So like a little bit of privacy, but it was a pretty big clearing.
Yeah. So we pull in and so Brenda, Chris's mom, mother-in-law extraordinaire, for Christmas, got us all matching pajamas, including Baxter.
Including Baxter.
Including Baxter. So we had promised...
Footy pajamas.
Footy hoodie pajamas. So not only do these pajamas have feet, they also have hoods and marsupial pouches in front.
Mm-hmm.
So we had said we would get a family photo in all of us in our hoodie footy pajamas. I think the brand is even Hoodie Footy.
Yeah, it is. I looked it up.
Okay. So I get into my Hoodie Footies and I get Baxter into his Hoodie Footies. And as Chris is getting into his Hoodie Footy, this truck with this excessively huge trailer pulls in.
Massive trailer. This isn't
massive.
Not like a big U-Haul trailer. Imagine like
you could fit maybe a car or two back there.
Yeah,
how long it was.
Yeah, if you've been to like a motorcycle rally, like those KTM like mechanic trailers, they're like taller than a person, and it's like a semi basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but it was attached to just a pickup truck.
Yeah.
So he pulls in, and I think, oh, and then he stops, and he gets out and walks around, and then he gets back in his truck. So I'm like, oh, he's just probably trying to figure out how to turn around to leave. Oh no, he doesn't leave. He freaking sets up camp like
he backs into where we set up
like
our campsite,
maybe 10 feet from us.
Yeah,
and I was like, okay, whatever. And then his friends show up.
And he. So this trailer, the reason it's so big is because he's got freaking 4-wheel drive off road vehicles loaded like inside of his
side
trailer,
side by side. It's like multiple side by side.
So he drops. The reason this is so funny is this is BLM land. We're not like in a designated campground. So there's like there's land everywhere where this person can camp. But I think we just randomly chose like their favorite spot in the world because they headed right to this clearing that we're in and just unload. And they knew we were there because the guy was like staring at us from a distance but didn't get close because it's like these strangers in this pop-up tent walking around in matching pajamas. I'm not going to get close to those guys.
And then we, of course, did our family photo while he was like...
He's like, he's unloading his trucks right next to us. And I'm standing there in my pajamas in the snow, setting up a tripod to take a picture, to do a picture of us in the back of the... It was so embarrassing. It took me probably like... 30 minutes just to get my pajamas on because I had to keep looking back to make sure he wasn't looking at us because it was just, the pajamas aren't like, they don't, it's not what an adult should be wearing out camping. You know, it's like.
Also, they're really difficult to get on because the legs are so long. And then when you've got putting on the legs, you have to try and make sure like the arms and the hoodie aren't like dragging in the dirt or snow. And like, they're kind of complicated.
Yeah. So it's super embarrassing, but. But just to make it more embarrassing, this guy starts unloading these quads and or side by sides, whatever they were. They weren't quads; they were bigger than that, mm-hmm. and they were two and four seaters and stuff.
So I think they were like side by sides.
Yeah, and then he sets up his lighting, and then he starts a campfire, and then he starts ripping around on these things in the dark. It's like 8 or 9 o'clock at night. He's just doing circles around us because there's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go.
We're right next to a fence right now. So he can't go beyond the fence. If he goes the other direction, he'll hit the highway that we just came off of. So he's literally just like ripping around our truck as we're taking these pictures. And it was so hard to comprehend what this person was thinking. I mean, they must have just really liked that spot and they just don't care.
Well, I think that they had pre-designated that spot. Because his friend showed up, and then his friend showed up, and then they started putting on this, like, really stereotypical, like, early 40s white man, like, metal. Right. Like, if you could imagine, like, a guy who was maybe, like, 18 in the early 90s listening to, like, Metallica and Pantera. Yeah. This was that guy grown up. Still listening. And not, I actually do enjoy Pantera. Pantera has a time and a place. Not while I'm camping in beautiful like wilderness. But yes. So his friends show up and they have dogs. Not just any like regular like,
I forgot about this.
Like farm dogs. Like this Rottweiler probably was about 120 pounds. Like this was a solid animal, like with an enormous head. And he didn't like us.
And he was protecting.
And he was protecting
those quads. Yeah.
So like it got to the point where I was too scared to go out and pee at night. So I just held it all night. Chris went out and like the dog was just growling. Well, first of all, we could hear it around our camper.
It kept like, it's poking around.
You could hear its tags jingling.
Mm-hmm, rub up against the truck a little bit. Mm-hmm. You can hear it a little breathing out there, peeking at us through the back, through our back window. He's keeping a good eye on us.
Right. And Baxter's just kind of like aware, like very aware, but still like laying down in bed, not barking, not squeaking, not doing any like Baxter noises, but still very, very much aware that there was another dog very, very close to us. And then Chris got out to pee. And this is why I didn't pee.
Well, the dog just loses its shit. I mean, it's barking and it's doing that cartoon jump with the straight legs where it just like its legs are fully extended and it jumps up and down and it's just bouncing around.
Like a pogo stick.
Yeah, forward, backwards, barking, 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 barking.
And not like the woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. It was more like a Yeah. So, I don't know if that was, like, I don't know how that's going to translate.
Which I get, like, it was dark out,
yeah.
You know, he couldn't, it's kind of, I think he was just kind of trying to figure out what's going on, and yeah. All of a sudden the door starts opening, and like this random person starts coming out, but yeah. Like, yeah, I couldn't really gauge him that well at that point. In the morning, though, it was a better interaction. He was still hanging out by our truck, but a little bit more friendly.
I took Baxter out quickly because I didn't know if the dog was still out or camping inside its person's camping area. Mm-hmm. So I took Bax out and then immediately put him in the truck. And I peed. And then the dog comes like rushing into our camping area. And I'm like, Chris, close the other door. Because like one of the doors to the truck on the other side was open. And I was like fleeing into like the passenger seat of the truck and closing my door. And I didn't want the dog jumping into the truck and trying to like attack Baxter. And this is all at like 5:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Dark again.
Yeah. So it's just a really awesome time to meet a new dog that's like bigger than my face.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because his humans were still obviously still sleeping.
Yeah.
It was very early, very dark. They had stayed up pretty late. You know, we could tell because they were still going.
Yeah.
And he's just the dog.
Out in the
snow. Dog just hanging out. Yeah, he just walks around. Which is kind of crazy. But I mean, if the dog's used to it, I guess it's totally cool.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't go anywhere, unlike Baxter.
Yeah, that obviously we can't do that with Baxter, but
obviously.
Know, maybe someday.
So anyways, that was our last night camping, which was less than magical, but we had some pretty great nights. We had some just really great days and really great nights. So our last night and our last day were pretty much the biggest Debbie Downers of the whole trip.
Yeah.
That 2-hour traffic jam.
Yep.
Coming home. So we were supposed to get home probably like around 5:30, and we got home at 7-ish.
So a couple different accidents. There was some weather stuff. So
yeah. So I-70 goes east and west from Denver, and it's an older highway. It's only 2 lanes. And there's some major ski resorts. Vail is on 70, and there's a couple others. And so it gets really packed with skiers and tubers and snowboarders when the snow is nice. And the snow was nice. So it was already really packed, and it was the holiday. And then there was like 2 big accidents. And then, yeah. And there was a 3rd accident that happened just as we were passing it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, the last day was not the most amazing day.
But we did get to, after Seattle, on our way to California, we got to revisit a campsite that we visited coming home from Baxter, trying to get back in Bend. There was that campsite.
Yeah, that campsite in Bend.
Yeah, when
we got the call that Baxter had been spotted, and we drove back up to Maupin and spent 2 days, 2.5 days looking for Baxter. Mm-hmm. We, on our way back, we camped just outside of Bend, and we went back to that site, but this time with Baxter. It's not my favorite camp place that we've ever camped, but it was nice to go back to that place and not be completely heartbroken this time.
Yeah. It might take a little longer to go back to Maupin, though.
I don't know. Yeah. It's going to be hard to go back to.
Give that a little bit more time.
Yeah.
But yeah, someday, maybe.
Someday. Not Bax. Boopy nose. Favorite camp spot?
Yeah.
Which one was it? Oh, yeah. We'll have to talk about that. Do you want to just skip the favorite camp spot and go straight to that thing?
Sure. Yeah, I was showing you a picture of... we had a really interesting moment on the way to LA, for sure. Our general strategy while we've been driving, including finding campsites, is just kind of like, it's been really rough. Like, we don't even have necessarily a destination in mind. We had 2 major checkpoints. One is getting to Seattle by Christmas or by Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other checkpoint was getting to LA by the 30th, by the evening of the 30th.
Yep.
Because we wanted to do New Year's Eve and New Year's Day in Disneyland.
Yep.
And we're staying with Luke there, a friend who happens to live very close and graciously watched Baxter while we were there.
Oh my God. This family... they are the most magical people in the world, and we are super, super lucky that they like us.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And we're really super lucky they like Baxter too, because they are so, so wonderful. But anyways.
And they got a dog too, Cash, and
Cashito.
He gets along super well.
Yeah,
he gets along super well with Baxter. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, love those.
Yeah, that was amazing. Family. I think that might have been the highlight of the trip for Baxter.
Oh my gosh.
He went on a hike. He hung out with other dog all day.
I mean, we've lived in a couple of places that had backyards, but never in a place where it was sunny and warm, like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we get out of the truck and we take Cash and Baxter to the backyard. And Baxter just runs circles for a while because he's been cooped up in the truck for a long time. And then he just lays on the deck in the sun. And it's just like... you can just see him just immediately like relax into the place. And it's such a great thing to see, because he'd been a little stressed out that last day.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't mind camping, but I think too many days in a row in the truck is a lot for him.
Yeah, he gets a lot of like potty breaks and stuff, but still it's like in and out.
Yeah, not a lot of like duration like walking. So I think he gets a little stir crazy.
Yep, as we all do.
Yeah, I get it too. I know you do. But anyway, so we're on our way to LA to meet up with our amazing friends.
Yeah, we just got these two checkpoints. And our general strategy in between is just kind of try to space it out so we don't have to have any super long days. And while we're doing that, we're keeping our eyes open for like, you know, as the day starts ending and stuff, we're keeping our eyes open just for cool stuff to check out, cool places to camp, that kind of stuff. Well, right outside of LA, maybe like an hour or so-ish?
Probably more than an hour. I think the nearest town is, it starts with a K.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at a map. It's Kramer Junction or something.
Kramer Hills.
Right above Kramer Junction. What's a big place? Barstow. It's west of Barstow. So we're going down that highway there, which is highway something. I got a giant
blue
line
Star
on it.
Blue Star Memorial Highway.
Okay. Blue Star Memorial Highway. And yeah, Louisa spots this thing.
So I'm teaching astronomy for the first time ever this semester. I've never taught astronomy. I've never even taken an astronomy course, right? I taught cosmology and physics, which is like how physicists explain how our universe began, but that's where I've stopped. So I've been like super curious on all things astronomy, trying to get ready to teach this class. So I see this big building with this big round ball on top, and I immediately think it's an observatory. It's got a giant telescope in it. So we're looking, and then on the other side of the highway is a similar round ball, but it's not attached to a building. It's just on like scaffold, like permanent scaffolding structure to get it off the ground a little. So we're driving, and I'm like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like, I wonder I'm thinking in my head, like, what organization does it belong to? Like, what university is nearby? Blah, blah, blah. So all these things are going through my head about, like, this isn't the best place for an observatory because there's mountains, but like, maybe it's doing something else. It can look past mountains.
It's kind of on the top of a hill.
It's on the top of a hill, so we can see it. So Chris is thinking, like, it's starting to get close to sunset, so we're kind of approaching that magic hour anyway. So he's like, oh, I kind of want to pull off and take pictures. So we slow down, and there's a road, and Chris misses it. He's like, oh, damn, that would have been a good road. So we're still driving slowly, and then we approach this other road and pull into it. And on either side of this paved road are huge, like, stone structures that clearly used to hold signs. Like, you know, when you go into, like, a large complex and it's, like, has the address number and it tells you, like, what company this is for or, like, what, like, complex this is called. It was, like, one of those, but all the signage had been stripped away.
Yeah, like if you go into, like, a state park, it's got the big cement blocks and then the wood sign, you know, that says, you know, Zion National Park. You know?
But it's like that sign had been stripped off. Like, you could see where the adhesive spots still were where they originally stuck the sign.
Mm-hmm.
So we pull in and there's gates. There are these rusted, broken, like multiple gates that we passed through. So the first one was a chain link fence and the gate was open and broken. And then we passed like a steel bar gate that is broken in half and like set on the side of the road. And then we get up to another chain link fence that has another gate that's open and broken. And so we're driving up and it's clear that there used to be buildings here that have been torn down. And there's a parking lot, a multi-level parking lot that has the United States seal, but the seal has clearly not been maintained. Like, nothing's been maintained for a long time. Like,
yeah,
the road.
And all the gates. It's not like someone just, like, drove a truck through them. They're
they're just old.
They're, like, rusted and it's like someone opened the gates, like, 50 years ago and then never came back.
Right. And even, like, the road up there, you know, in California, the roads crack because of the heat. And then if you don't maintain them, plants start growing up through those cracks. And it was all over these like giant cracks that had grown over time and plants had just started taking over. And what got me the most was the United States seal. It was like a three-dimensional like sculpture of the seal of the United States in this parking lot, but it had clearly not been painted or maintained for many, 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 many years. And having been in the military, like, some things still stick in my brain, and an unmaintained seal of the United States is like sacrilegious almost. Like, you don't just forget those. You maintain those or you take them down. So it's still there and it's completely unmaintained. So we keep driving and we end up by like multiple helicopter pads, which again are completely cracked open and there's tumbleweeds like growing out of them. And Chris pulls over and starts taking pictures.
And I should say that like ever since the first, so we at the very first gate, we did stop and we're like, this is weird. Because we didn't know what's up this street, but it looked like it head towards the observatory that we saw from the highway.
Yeah.
So we're kind of curious because we want to see the observatory, but then also like, dude, this is weird. What is up with this? Like,
it was really uncomfortable.
What is up with us passing through all these gates, and why does it look like there used to be like a freaking military base here, and it just blew up and everybody left, and no one, and then they just decided not to clean up their mess.
It was something out of like a 007 movie is the only way I could describe it. Like 007 goes to an abandoned military base and he has some like confrontation with some villain. Like some villain had overtaken like a military base. That's what it looked like. It looked like an abandoned military base that had been abandoned for like 50 plus years. But the weird thing about it was the building with the giant ball that I thought was an observatory was in pristine condition. And like everything else had graffiti, there was broken bottles, there was litter, like nothing had been maintained around this building. But the road and even the road leading up to the building, completely unmaintained. But that building, it was like on point.
Mm-hmm.
There was like no graffiti. There was giant satellites on the side that were clearly still being used.
Yeah, so I park. So we get up to the top of this like tiered parking area, and I park on one of the like helicopter pad things, you know, kind of like, you know, in like a slant. I park kind of to the side so I could kind of see the side of the truck and see the observatory thing. And I start taking pictures and I'm just kind of paying attention to what I'm doing. Louisa's out walking Baxter, and apparently she sees this truck come up from.
It's like a Ford Explorer, like an older one,
mm-hmm.
from maybe like the 90s.
And it didn't come from the way that we came.
No, it was coming down towards us, clearly from the building with the ball on top, mm-hmm. which getting closer, there's no lens. So it's not an observatory.
Right, the dome is completely sealed.
Solid.
Yeah,
there's no place for a lens, so they're not looking at outer space from there.
So I am taking pictures. I don't see the truck as soon as Louisa because I'm looking through the viewfinder and stuff. But then I do see it, and it pulls up. It doesn't drive up to us, but clearly we have triggered this truck, right? Because why would it be here? And it's driving straight towards us. It's very weird. So the truck pulls up behind our truck,
mm-hmm.
and just sits there. So it's getting kind of weird at this point. So then I just, start packing up my camera. I, you know, call over to Louisa, say, okay, I'm good. I'm ready to go. You know, Louisa says, as the truck's coming down, Louisa says, like, we got a visitor or something like that.
I was like, hey, we got friends.
Yeah.
And I, like, didn't want to freak out too much because I thought maybe it was just another car that pulled off the highway that had, because the road from the highway up to this building split. And we took the left-hand side. So you could have gone to the right, which probably went directly up to the building. So I thought, oh, maybe another car pulled off. And they thought it was cool, too. And they're just coming around. So I was like, hey, we've got friends. And I see Chris is already, like, getting into the truck. So I, like, kind of, I don't want to run because, A, this place is kind of giving me the heebie-jeebies. And I feel like this is a place where you should not look like you're running for something. I don't know why. I just get this weird feeling about this place. So I like slowly mosey over to the truck like it's no big deal. And I put Baxter in and I take my sweet time putting his leash away. And then I pop in and then we start leaving. And as we're leaving, I asked Chris to stop at the lower parking lot where the American seal was because I wanted to take a picture of the seal in like such disrepair because it's not something you see very often. And I'm super intrigued by it. So we pull off into the parking lot and I go out and take a picture. And I'm not really paying attention to what's going on behind us or around us. And then we get back in the truck and we're leaving. And the car that had come down the mountain or down the hill that I had told Chris about is now in front of us.
He had gone behind us on a different road, on a dirt road, up to the entrance, and now he's parked at the entrance we came in, facing the road.
Facing the road. So we pull past them, and I see him pull out his phone and take pictures of our license plate. And I was like, Chris, that guy just took pictures of our license plate.
And as soon as she said that, I look at his license plate, and it's a U.S. government vehicle.
And it's U.S. government. So now we're like both, so we already had the heebie-jeebies, right? You had it too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then, so
it's,
we're like,
it was so weird. It's it like, was it was, so it felt weird. Like we were not supposed to be there, but there were no signs anywhere.
Nothing.
And all the gates were open. So I was like, we have so much, like even if somebody does say something to us, there's nothing here to indicate that we're not supposed to be here. In fact, there's even like signs of lots of trespassing. There's garbage, there's graffiti. It seems like. Yeah. You know, this place is, you know, was maybe a thing at one point, but now clearly the locals, you know, hang out here perhaps. I don't know. But like, it felt like maybe we weren't supposed to be there, but also nothing said we weren't supposed to be there.
I mean, it definitely felt like we weren't supposed to be there, but then there was no indication. There's nothing saying no trespassing, do not enter. There was absolutely zero indication to deter somebody from going in there.
Yeah. But except when this freaking truck pulled up.
Except for when they start taking pictures of your license
plate. And he keeps getting, he pulled up to us so close and he doesn't say anything.
Nothing.
That's the weirdest part. It's like, if he's going to take a picture of our plate and then kind of wave us down and say, hey, you know what? He never talked to us, so I don't know what the story is.
But he would say.
But if he would have said something, I think it would have been less awkward. But just the fact that he like was non-confrontational and still felt the need to like record us being there was so freaking awkward.
So weird.
And that he was in a government vehicle.
Right.
So anyways.
So we pull off. So we keep going. We have to get gas before our last leg to Brea or LA. So I start Googling this place. So I like, Chris found some information about it. So I took that a little bit further and we Googled some more and we found out that it had been an Air Force base for a long time. And then in the 1960s, the Air Force closed it down, but the FAA took it over. So that makes sense why the American Seal was in such disrepair, because it's no longer a military base. I would think the FAA would still maintain it, but I guess not. So the FAA uses it for domestic surveillance. No, what is it?
Civil defense.
Civil defense.
So it's not an observatory. It's a radar tower.
It's a radar tower.
And the one on the other side of the highway is another radar tower, and they're used for triangulation. So
yeah.
The purpose of those towers, when we were reading on Wikipedia, is basically to just observe stuff in the sky and protect that part of California.
Yeah.
So it's surveilling anything that's in the air. If it's, you know, unidentified aircraft or whatever, then they're the ones that are going to relay that information to people who care about it.
Right.
So,
and being on the coast has always been vulnerable. So
right.
That makes sense.
So because of its classification as being civil defense, it's actually it's similar to like a power plant or any other
part of infrastructure,
whereas it's like you're not supposed to get close to it technically, and if you are, like, that's kind of a threat, you know.
Yeah.
Like why are these two random people pulling up and taking pictures of our radar system from all these sides, and you know.
Yeah. And Chris is all like kind of militaried out, like jet black cargo pants, jet black like jacket, like, you know, the Danner military grade, like desert boots. I'm like, you know, in a pair of yoga pants and like Birkenstocks, so I'm clearly not very military.
I don't,
and then with a dog, like a mutt on a leash, not like, you know, a German Shepherd or anything like that. Like, you know, I've got Baxter. He's not threatening. But still, like, I think that the fact that we were taking pictures triggered something, you know. And if the guy had just approached us, I probably would have just said, I'm a science teacher and I thought this was an observatory.
Yeah.
And now I just think it's cool. But
I mean, it's a little weird. I mean, not that many people, you know, drive down a highway and just pull off and look at stuff. So like,
yeah,
I guess it.
Like, we're weird. Anyways.
Why would a truck pull off the highway, drive all the way up to this tiered parking thing, drive to the very top, explore the parking lot, park on top, take a bunch of pictures. I get it. It's weird. So,
and we were specifically taking pictures of the building with the ball on top.
Yeah. So,
is the FAA still controls that.
Yeah. So I think that it was more of like a precaution on their part. They're like, you know, if something does happen, we've documented this vehicle being here.
And these people.
Yeah. We'll have some information we can use to look something up. But I don't think we necessarily weren't allowed to be there. It was just strange that we were there.
Yeah. I don't know. The whole thing was weird.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was probably one of the weirdest experiences besides like the camp interrupters. It was weirder than the camp interrupters.
Oh, you mean for this trip? Yeah, it was definitely the weirdest thing ever.
The weirdest
thing. Yeah, it's one of the weirdest things that in recent memory. Yeah, that was so weird.
So weird. What else happened? So we got the weird thing. We got the weird people.
Yeah.
We covered the weird.
Yeah, we covered the weird stuff. That's kind of the important stuff, though.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's lots of other things we can talk about, but... We could also save that for another time if we'd like to.
We could talk about Disneyland at a different time.
Yeah.
Because that was pretty fun. We got to see the new Star Wars world.
That was fun. The day that we went, though, wasn't necessarily the best day, but it actually wasn't that bad.
No.
But it's the busiest day of Disneyland.
They shut down Disney World at noon.
Yeah.
Because it was at capacity. I don't think they shut it down at all. I think the people were still streaming in when we were leaving.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So it wasn't at capacity, which if that wasn't capacity...
I don't want to see what capacity's like.
We literally ate a dinner snack on top of a garbage can next to the restaurant we bought the dinner snack at because there was literally not a single place to sit in probably a mile radius.
Yep.
I mean, people were already taking over the main square area by the Walt Disney statue in front of Cinderella's Palace. They had already started just sitting in the middle of the sidewalk waiting for the fireworks. 3 hours before the fireworks even started.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 hours before the 9 p.m., not the midnight.
Right.
The 9 p.m. fireworks started. So, yeah, it was really crowded, but...
Yeah, getting our food at a restaurant and then eating it off of a garbage can, I think was probably one of the low points.
The low points. But everything else went really well. Like those fast passes worked really well. There was only one line that we stood in for a really long period of time. And that was in the new Star Wars land. And it was for the Millennium Falcon ride. Mm-hmm. We stood in line for 2 hours. It was almost 75 degrees. Chris almost turned into a lobster.
I had your shirt over my head.
My shirt
like
over your head, trying to keep the sun off of you. And then the ride made me want to throw up.
Yeah, it was one of the... I don't like these rides.
I don't like them either.
It was one of those ones... It was one of those stupid rides, in my opinion. or easy to make rides. You have a screen in front of you. You know the type of ride. You have a screen in front of you, and then you have a seat that moves. And, you know, stuff is happening on the screen and you're moving around. It's like the lamest way to make a ride. I mean, it's so much cool. Even like the It's a Small World ride, which is like super freaking annoying as a ride because you're listening to the same song on loop for like 5 minutes.
Right. But
you're in a boat and it's actually moving and you're looking at like physical things moving around.
Right.
And it's like, even if it's annoying, you can appreciate the amount of work that went into this.
But, each doll has to have a costume.
Yeah.
It has to be programmed to move its movement. And they have to sync it up with the music. So, yeah, It's a Small World seems really basic, but there's a lot of individual, parts that have to be individually curated. So there's a lot of work that goes into maintaining that ride, especially when they redo it for Christmas. They change the song, they change the costumes, they change the backgrounds. Like, so much goes into it. And this ride was really just like a 180-degree screen. You're sitting in the cockpit.
Star Wars ride. Right, the Star Wars ride.
Yeah, the Millennium Falcon. So supposedly you're in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. And you're teamed up with... So we went in as a twosome. So there's six people in the cockpit. Two people are the pilot, two people are the gunners, and then two people deal with maintenance and repairs. And so through this ride, each team is given instructions, like you need to shoot to the left, or you need to steer to the right, or you need to, like, there's, you know, we've been hit on this side, and then, you know, we're like leaking something. So everyone has a task.
And they have a button they can push.
Yeah. So we've got buttons or levers that we need to push to, like, fulfill the ride. Except that because I got so motion sickness, like such horrible motion sickness, I thought I was going to throw up. Chris and I were pilots. So Chris moved forwards and backwards. So he accelerated and decelerated. My job was to move left and right. Well, I got so nauseous, I stopped being able to steer, and the ride still went. So essentially, you don't even have to do anything in the ride. You could just sit there and get sick.
Which makes sense, because you're watching a movie.
Right.
I mean, it's a freaking video.
But it's not even like, you're just like a car, you're just delivering cargo.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, so anyone who's done the ride and loves it, I'm sorry that I don't love the ride you love. Supposedly, right now, as of the 7th, so 3 days ago, a new roller coaster ride opened up at Star Wars. We missed it because we were there on the 31st. I hope it's far and away more magical than this Millennium Falcon ride.
I mean, the line...
2 hours.
That's incredible. But I was even going to say the line getting into the ride, I personally thought was more entertaining and impressive than the ride itself. It was really freaking sweet.
They took us behind the scenes. You went into employee area only areas. That's the line had gotten so intense that they had actually opened up behind the scenes, cast members only area.
And decked it out with like Star Wars attire.
Yeah. And then had temporary line maze to follow, done with like painter's tape.
Yeah. And then once you got into the ride, the process of loading into your ship was what I thought was super cool too. It seemed humongous. I mean,
yeah.
You went through this maze of hallways and everything was just like...
It was so well done.
Yeah, it was so... immersive and decorated.
So I feel like if you ever go to Star Wars and the line isn't 2 hours, go through the line to get to the ride, because what they did is over the top and amazing. Everything in Star Wars Land took my breath away, including the cast members' costumes were so great. Mm-hmm. But I can't recommend the actual ride. Sorry. It made me want to throw up for like an hour afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine for what it was. But I do think that like part of the reason you go to Disneyland especially is you want that experience you can't get on your couch at home watching. Like,
yeah.
We could watch a movie at home. We don't need to go all the way to Disneyland to watch a movie and press a plastic button.
But like, there's so much more. Disney does everything.
The physical part is so impressive.
I mean, even the soda bottles in Star Wars Land are completely different.
Yeah, they redesigned the
everything, like Coca-Cola and
the
Sprite.
Beverages. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like it's like this little
spherical round ball.
Yeah, it's really
and
cool.
And it's not English. And I guess I saw some kids, I didn't quite understand everything. And I guess there's like interactive games you can play on your phone in Star Wars Land where if you open up this app, it translates the language into English. So you actually, so all the signs on like the restaurants and the bathrooms, anything, any sign is not in English. But if you hold up your phone, it translates it for you. And there's also like scavenger hunts where you go around and you have to find things. So that could be super cool too. If you're not there on New Year's Eve where there's like thousands of people. They also have really good bathrooms and water bottle fill stations in the Star Wars Land, which were clutch.
Yeah. Yeah. Star Wars Land was definitely the highlight.
Really good.
Of Disneyland.
And they redid the roller coaster, the one in Futureland.
Space Mountain.
Space Mountain. They redid it to be part of episode 4, Star Wars.
Yeah.
And it was really good. It was so well done. I was so impressed. I was like, how do you improve on this? But no, they did. And it was really good.
Yeah.
I really loved it. I could have done that ride three more times.
I mean, it's probably the same track, but they redid the whole...
Oh, it's definitely the same track.
All the stuff around the track, all the audio is completely redone. Yeah. All the lights and the characters, everything is redone. Yeah. What's the other? Oh, the other ride that really impressed me that I actually thought was going to suck was the Haunted House.
Oh yeah, because they redo it for the holidays.
I've been to the Haunted House like twice, and it's kind of like you sit in a chair and you like, I don't know, I never really liked it, but I was super impressed by it because
they
redid the whole freaking thing for the holidays, like. All the audio, the whole story was all re-recorded and all the characters were dressed up and
They do it the nightmare before Christmas thing. And then they do it just for Christmas time.
And I liked it better than the normal one.
I still like the normal one more.
Okay.
But it was, again, it's just super amazing to see the amount of effort and attention to detail that Disney does for everything. They changed this ride for a month and a half, 2 months, and it's done to such a great degree, you forget what the original ride looks like. Mm-hmm. It is so well done.
Yeah, same with Small World. That's
Small World was great, too.
That's the other one they redid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess we were very sensitive to that stuff going into it because one of the things we watched in the truck on the way up was that documentary.
Oh, yeah. On Disney Plus, it's like a 5-episode series called Imagination. Mm-hmm. And it's the building of the Disney parks. So we watched the first 2 episodes, the building of Disneyland. And then the second episode is Disney World and Disney Tokyo. And so we saw how much work and effort and like ingenuity, like none of the stuff had ever been done before. And these people are just, Walt Disney comes up with an idea. Everyone thinks it's awesome, but nobody knows how to execute it. So they're literally thinking on their feet. And Walt Disney gives them like a whole machine shop to like make things that move for the first time ever.
And the physical part is like the most amazing part of it all. It's like that Star Wars Mandalorian show that we just watched.
Right.
There was so much in that show that could have been CG, but they used physical stuff.
And
like the Yoda.
Yeah.
The Yoda looks so like not real.
Right.
But it's so much more satisfying because it's like this physical little doll that moves and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of cool stuff about Disneyland and like Star Wars land is when you're in there, it has that same level of like cheesiness, but authenticity. So like if you watch a Star Wars movie, it's a little bit cheesy.
Yeah.
Because they do everything is physical and it's kind of, you can tell it's a robot. And like if you look at the cantina scene and you got all those like cheesy ass robots in there.
Yeah.
And then when you go to the Star Wars land in Disneyland, it's got that same stuff. It's got a bunch of robots everywhere and they're just like the movie where they're believable, but right. Like they're cheesy. It's super
this,
fun.
Like, stuff on walls that are supposed to look like electronics or like somehow like fancy keypads from the future that are supposed to open things or weird like electrical boxes from the future, like stuff that doesn't need to be there, but it just adds a level of like kitsch that they're in the Star Wars movies. And then they're in Star Wars land. So instead of just having like a wall with a door, they have a wall with this super ornate like door jamb to make it look like the door slides up and down instead of just opening in and out like a regular door. And then they've got like a fancy keypad where you think you should be like plugging in numbers to get in. And like there's a label to the door that's in a different language that if you have this app, you can hold up the app and it'll tell you like it just says cast members only or something. But like every single thing has that much detail to it. And like the buttons are different colors and different sizes. And like it's just right down to every little bit. And it's so cool.
Well, what do you think we wrap it up here
I'm
now?
I'm hungry. I'm ready for pizza.
Yeah. So our trip was around
15 days.
Yeah. It was around 4,500 miles, I think.
Nine states.
We serviced the truck right before we left, and now we have to service it again.
And get a new windshield.
Oh, yeah. And we got lots of things to talk about another time. But yeah, we have a absolute ginormous crack in our windshield and have to replace it now, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was the only downfall, though. And I'll be honest.
We got new tires, so I didn't have to reinflate our tires the entire trip.
Oh, yeah, we don't have a nail stuck in one of our
and
tires.
And we had all our oils changed, our differential oil, our power steering fluid, everything is all fresh.
Everything was right on target. So it was great. It was a great trip. Next year, maybe we head home a little bit earlier.
Maybe we're talking about maybe skiing, getting a little cabin or something.
We were talking about instead of going to Disneyland, getting a ski in, ski out cabin somewhere, like maybe in Idaho or Utah, a little bit closer to home. Mm-hmm. But that's for next year. We've got a whole year to plan that.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us again, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right. Bye, everybody. Bye.